Welcome to the Head to Heal podcast, where you'll go head over heels learning about how the body and the brain work together to either feed disease or fight it. I'm your host, Jordana Sade, certified holistic nutritionist and founder of the Mindful Clinic. With a background in nutrition, behavioral neuropsychology, and hypnosis, I'm going to walk you through the root cause of your symptoms and disordered behaviors. The body has an innate ability to heal. No one is destined for illness, and most, if not all, disorders can be reversed. Come with me as we develop a new understanding of how you can use your head to heal and truly thrive. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Head to Heal podcast. I'm your host, Jordana Sade, certified holistic nutritionist, hypnotherapist, and founder of the Mindful Clinic. I am so excited to talk to you guys about this specific topic. And the first thing that I want to say is that I'm very sorry because I have been requested to talk about this for many, many years. And it's taken me a long time to actually put it together and really understand exactly what I wanted to say. And sometimes I'll write notes before I do these podcasts. And so I think the first time I was asked to do a podcast like this, it was at least 2 years ago because it was before Veda. And I was clear on what I wanted to say. So I made a couple of notes and then it just didn't feel like the right time. I wasn't in the swing of it. And then I had Veda and, you know, I was like, oh, this is so important. I know I need to get this message out there. And then again, you know, people come in my DMs all the time and they ask, can you please do a podcast on this? And I'm, yes, okay, of course I'll do it. And then I just, for some reason, this topic never got to it. Now, I woke up this morning and I had an email from a very lovely listener. And so the email really motivated me, gave me that final push to say enough is enough. We all really, really need to talk about this. And so the topic that we're going to talk about now that I've ramped it up so much is how to not fuck up your kids' eating. How to not fuck up your kids with their eating. And there's two kind of columns that I want to work on today or talk about today. And the first one is I really want to talk about the kid, right? So if you're a mother, you have small kids, you don't want to fuck up their eating. You don't want them to struggle with food like you had to. You don't want them to struggle with weight like you did. And so we're going to talk about that. And that is going to be the majority of the episode. And then the other thing that I need to touch on, which was the thing that motivated me to even do this podcast, is the message that I got this morning. So I got an email this morning from a listener. Thank you so much for listening. And also, I mean, if you hate me after this, I'm sorry, but it's so important because here's the thing. The message this morning said, oh my gosh, can you help? Can I book a consultation with you? My daughter and her new boyfriend have gotten obese together, essentially. And she won't listen to me and I need your help. And this was a really good message for me to receive because, first of all, it really triggered me. I got immediately triggered. I was like gonna wake up and like email back and say a bunch of stuff, and you'll hear it in a second. But the other thing is that I actually also will be a mother of older children, and so I really want to be mindful and understand that I don't know exactly how that feels to have an older child who, you know, disregards their health, disregards their values in order to pick up an addictive behavior. Maybe it's for people pleasing, maybe it's codependency. We can talk about things and those things in other episodes. I know I've talked about people pleasing before, but I'm sure that is very hard. And so I want to recognize, I know it's hard when you're in the mom position and you just want the best for your kids. I recognize that you wanting your child to be healthy is not a crime. And I recognize that you wanting your child to be healthy is very natural and normal, and it comes fully out of love. Now, I'm going to start with this topic just because it's going to be short and sweet. And then we'll get into, if you have small children, how to not fuck it up at that age, because that is really the crux of it. Once we're older, it's a little too late. Like, sorry, moms. But at the end of the day, when your child is over the age of 13, you can't go back and rewire the habits they have around food. Before the age of 7, that's when all the subconscious programming is being wired in. And so before the age of 7 is when it's really important to kind of harness this really healthy relationship to food. And we are going to focus a lot on that today. And I gave the buffer until about 13 because, I mean, it's not completely irreparable between the ages of 7 and 13. But once that kid is going through puberty, they do not fucking care what you want as a mother. Sorry. It's really about empowering them to do the right decision. And so for the moms who have adult children who are neglecting their health and recognizing that must be really hard, the thing that I want to say to you is that it is not your job to fix that problem. And in fact, the more you try and fix that problem, the worse it's going to get. Because all your child hears at that age is, I'm unlovable and there's something wrong with me. And if even if you come at it from a place of true love, not even just, oh, I'm trying to fix you, or you have to go do something about this, or please stop eating, can't you see how big you've gotten? Even if you're just so gentle with it, maybe even asking them with compassion, hey, are you okay? Are you going through something? You know, even that type of narrative around adult children really tells them that there is something wrong with them, and it takes away their power. I work with a client right now, and she's got a mom who's pretty invasive and also lets her opinion be known about my client's eating habits. And every single time that she goes to meet with her mother or her parents in general, it's like we have to start over from square one. The reality is, if your kids are adults, they fucking know that they're overweight. Okay, they know, they're not blind. They can look in the mirror and they can see that, you know, their clothes aren't fitting and that, you know, I'm sure they don't feel good about themselves. There is nothing that you can do as a mother to take them out of that other than provide them with the tools to and empower them to do that themselves. So that's what this looks like. The first thing, and this is what I emailed this client about, first thing is just share the content. Share my podcast. It's less about, oh, I want you to change and look how you've let yourself go. And it's more about, oh my gosh, I found this really cool podcast, if I do say so myself. I'd love for you to listen to it. She talks about health. She talks about mental health, you know. And so I feel like giving them the tools, kind of, it's like holding the bait there and seeing if they take it and allowing them to learn the lessons that they need to learn on their own is the best way to approach that. There can be no narrative of you've let yourself go, what are you going to do about it, something has to change. As soon as you approach it like that, the child will create a wedge between you, or the adult child will create a wedge between you and pull away. And actually, the problem is going to get so much worse, because when they are engaging in the eating behavior, they know that you're not going to approve of it. And, you know, forbidden fruit tastes the sweetest, honey, right? So it's the more that the mother tries to restrict and control the child's, adult child's experience, the more that adult child is going to rebel, and it is actually going to backfire immediately. So, you know, I love you moms and happy to have a conversation, but at the end of the day, you can't help your child, only they can help themselves when they're adults. Okay, let's get into the fun stuff. So I'm so excited to talk about this because I have two small children. One of them is now 7, and it is very clear how his eating behaviors have developed in a way that I actually am not super proud of. So right off the bat, I'm just going to put all my cards on the table. With my son who's 7, my daughter's 1, but with my son who's 7, we didn't do the best job. Now, part of the problem was we lived with my parents for so long. So my mom, who's the food god, she fed him exactly like she fed me. So he does have a lot of the same eating tendencies around food as I did when I was a kid. The only difference is my son is actually very thin and I was quite overweight, but there's still a lot of this negative relationship around food. It always feels like it's kind of a fight. And for a really long time, it was hard for us to get him to eat foods that were not highly palatable. So he basically was raised on pasta and hot dogs and pizza. And he has a pretty serious dairy intolerance, to the point where even now when he has it, he'll just poop his pants. And it's like really watery, and it's really traumatic for him because then he's walking around all day at school with poopy pants and he has to take his underwear off. And it's not ideal for anyone. And so, of course, in the household, as a parent, your number one job is to just make sure that there's good food in the house. Like, you're the one cooking, right? And we're going to get into how to deal with picky eaters and all of that stuff. But at the end of the day, your children are not going to eat the way you tell them to eat. Your children are going to eat the way that you eat. Your children are not going to learn to take care of themselves the way that you take care of them. Your children are going to learn to take care of themselves the way that you take care of yourself. So if you are cooking them a meal and then you're ordering in takeout for you and your husband, that's what your kids are going to learn to do. Or if you're cooking a good meal for them and then you're just like eating their scraps, like that's what they're going to learn to do. They're going to learn not to take care of themselves. And so more than anything, it is actually just very important that you model that type of behavior for your children, where you actually learn to take care of yourself and eat healthy and enjoy nourishing, nutritious foods and talk about how good this salad feels to eat, etc., or how amazing this grilled chicken, whatever it is, in front of the children, because they are going to model that behavior when they're older. Okay, so how to not fuck up your kids' eating. I can't tell you how many requests I got on this episode. In a later episode, I'm going to ask one of my clients to come on here and talk about picky eaters, because she's an occupational therapist. And so if she's open to it, I'm happy to have her on. But for now, let's just talk about how not to fuck up your kids, especially when it comes to eating and body image. The first thing that we really want to get a hold of is we really want to eliminate altogether the Clean Plate Club. Now, I've talked about this a lot, but this doesn't mean that we just kind of let kids eat, have a free-for-all, eat whatever they want. You know, the healthy food is there, and it's going to be there when you're hungry, is our kind of motto. So the Clean Plate Club is essentially making your kids finish their plate before they get up from the table. Now, my son, just like me, has ADHD tendencies, and it is very hard to get him to sit down for an entire meal. And I start to notice when he starts to feel full, he starts to get quite antsy. And so knowing the type of child that you have and just recognizing their behaviors, we just want to go little by little each day. So the Clean Plate Club is not making your child finish their plate before they leave the table. Now, if we think about behavioral psychology in general, human beings are pleasure seeking. And so that child knows that instead of eating my broccoli, I would rather watch TV. Instead of eating my broccoli, I'd rather play on the iPad. Instead of eating my broccoli, I'd rather do what literally anything else than eat my broccoli, right? And so, yes, and a part of this with the Clean Plate Club is your child is going to avoid or escape the demand of eating something that they don't like. And this we don't want to develop into a habit, but fighting with them and making them sit there until they eat their broccoli is really only teaching them that there's punishment around eating those types of foods. And they have to be forced to do it. And that's always going to create resistance in the future. And so what we do with our kids now that we don't live with my mom and we have kind of full control, is we make the meal, we put the meals down. When it gets to the time where my son is getting antsy and wants to get up from his seat, we go, no problem. I always tell my kids, and I really, really, really hope that you guys pick this up too, but I always tell them, listen, nobody can tell you when you're hungry or when you're full. Only you know that. I respect that you feel full now. The food is here when you're ready to eat again. And so what that means is, even if my son eats all the delicious stuff and leaves the broccoli, we let him leave, but the broccoli stays there. And when he gets hungry at 9 p.m. at night, right before we're gonna put him to sleep, and he asks for food, he eats the broccoli. That is the only option. We don't offer treats. We don't offer anything, any fruit, nothing. Nothing other than the broccoli gets offered. Because what this teaches the child is that it teaches them, first of all, to honor their true hunger and full signals. And this is something that we never learned growing up. I work with an entire generation of women who grew up with parents who enforced the Clean Plate Club. And all it did was it taught that child, when I feel full, not to listen to that signal. And we are born with this very intuitive process, just like my one-year-old. You know, I can't overfeed her. It doesn't matter if it's ice cream. It doesn't matter. If she's full, she's full. Right? And so when we grew up as a generation, honestly, we hear that intuitive signal, I'm hungry and I'm full, very clearly, but people who are in charge of us, I'm using quotations, tell us not to listen to that signal and to do what they want us to do instead. And all that does is bring us further and further away from our true intuitive processes. This is one of the reasons why I don't believe in intuitive eating or trying to teach intuitive eating at an adult age, because that intuitive process, you know, we have to go back and actually teach the individual how to be intuitive with themselves. And this means going back to the inner child. And so the inner child work always comes before teaching intuitive eating. Okay. So the Clean Plate Club doesn't work. It just teaches your child not to listen to true hunger and true full signals. However, we don't want to positively reinforce not eating the foods that are healthy for them. And so we don't offer anything else, and the broccoli stays there until they want it. And if they don't want it, if they never want the broccoli, then the next time that you give them their meal, you give them the majority of the broccoli first, just on a plate, or the broccoli on a plate first, and then you give them the rest of their meal on a different plate. And so you can work with kind of timing of how you present the food to the children as well. Children are going to complain in the beginning, because if you haven't been doing these things up until now, then of course there's going to be a bit of pushback. Remember, like, children are creatures of habit as well, right? They love routine, they love habits, and for a lot of children, change is actually very difficult. And so we want to meet their resistance with a bit of compassion so that we can help them get through this transition better. So let's say you have a child who doesn't eat their broccoli, they don't come back for it at 9 p.m. at night, but they have to eat vegetables. You have to teach them to eat vegetables. So what I would do is I would give them their next meal. I would give them the vegetables first on a plate, and it's only the vegetables. And when they complain about it, we can say, okay, I'm hearing that you're not very hungry right now. Vegetables are very, very important for us because they help us, you know, build bones, etc. They help to nourish us. They help to give us energy. And I want you to be big and strong. So your vegetables are going to be waiting here for whenever you're hungry. And we literally did this. It was torture, but we did this for like 2 weeks straight. And eventually the kids started eating their vegetables. Like, my son actually has such a good palate right now. And it for so long, we couldn't get him to eat anything other than macaroni and cheese and hot dogs. And I'm not joking. And now he's eating beef and rapini and all of these things that we just couldn't get him to eat. Beta, we started her very young. She's a year old. And so she'll eat everything. We give her everything. We let her taste everything. She has a desire for food. But when she doesn't want food, we don't feed her. Which means that when she was sick for this past week and she didn't want any food, it was torture, but we just let it be. Like, you can't force her down, you know? Okay. So the other component to this is I really want you guys to help your children understand, and I want you guys to understand that eating is always about nourishment, okay? It's not about skinny or fat. When you tell kids don't eat this or that, it shows them that some foods are safe and some foods aren't. Because here's the thing. More than anything, more than food, water, shelter, sex, whatever, the human being's basic need is love and attachment. That's the basic need. Over food, water, shelter, sex, etc. So the human brain is designed to survive, right? It's not designed for success, it's designed to survive. And so once a child starts to associate that this food is not only bad, but is going to make me unattractive and therefore I won't be lovable, the child is going to develop a very dysregulated relationship with food in general, because instead of the child learning, I eat when I'm hungry and I stop when I'm full, and I'm actually more than worthy and deserving of being able to eat food, the child learns I have to earn my food, or eating is directly related to my attractiveness and my lovability. And this is really what happened for me. You know, my mom made all this delicious food, but it was always, oh, you know, Jordana, or if I had friends over, it would be like, well, she can have it, but Jordana, you can't have any, because you can't have any more, because I was already overweight. And so I started to really create this connection. Like, children are not stupid. So I started to create this connection between, if I eat, then I will not be attractive. And I actually don't deserve it, but somebody else does. And this, honestly, please take it from me, created a lifetime of disordered eating that I literally had to get multiple degrees in order to understand how to undo this. I don't want you guys to have to do that, okay? So eating is always about nourishment. It's not about skinny or fat. When you tell your kids, don't eat this or don't eat that, it really shows them that some foods are safe for them and that, like, some foods won't lead to them being unattractive and some foods are not and will make them unattractive, therefore unlovable and unworthy. And once they have the core wounds, especially before the age of seven, of I'm unworthy, I'm unlovable, I'm not enough, it starts to show up in other things. So it shows up in their relationships with their friends. It shows up in their confidence at school. It shows up in their ability to dream big for themselves. And so we really, like, our relationship to food is our relationship to life. It is our life-giving substance. And so at an early age, we want to reinforce a very positive and loving relationship with the thing that keeps us alive. I think that makes sense, you know? Okay. Because if we start to restrict, like, again, I understand that we can't just give kids Kit Kats all day long, right? And the cool thing is, when you're the parent and you have small children, you're the one who gets to decide the stuff is in the house, or it's in abundance, or it's available to them or not. And so when my son goes into the cupboard and wants a lot of chocolate, I go, no problem. I love chocolate. Let's have some fruit first. And when he finishes the fruit, if he still wants the chocolate, I let him have it. I never give him a whole thing. I always give him a piece or like something or one or the other. But more often than not, when a child wants something and we restrict it for them, the subconscious mind is going to create programs to get it anyways. I explained this in a episode so long ago, but I'm going to do it again for all the new listeners. But the part of the brain that deals with eating is the animal part of the brain. Okay. So the animal part of the brain, if you guys have any animals, if you have a dog or whatever, if you give the dog a milkshake and an apple, the dog is not going to be eating the milkshake thinking, oh my God, this is going to make me fat and I'm going to be unlovable, right? The dog's going to eat the milkshake and go, good, yum. Right? And so when we start to restrict certain foods, the conscious part of the brain that makes us human, where all of our goals and our dreams is, this is where, like, I like the color blue lives and I want to be thin lives and I want to be healthy and I want to be lovable, lives in the conscious part of the brain. When that part of the brain starts to go, milkshakes are bad, but apples are good, the primitive part of the brain, the animal part of the brain, literally doesn't understand. It just hears food will be scarce. Food will be restricted. And because the primitive part of the brain doesn't understand that that food isn't necessarily nutritious or anything, it just hears food is going to be restricted. It is going to create programs in the brain to gain access to it at all costs. So cravings are going to increase. The minute you have access to it, you're literally going to go in blackout zone, I call with my clients. So basically this is like when you blackout eat, you look down and the food's all gone. You're like, I don't know where it went, or mindless eating. But as soon as you get access to it, because the conscious part of the brain wants to restrict it, the primitive part of the brain and the subconscious, which runs the show, is going to shut the prefrontal cortex off and it's going to overconsume. You're going to look up and not know where the whole thing went and then feel shitty about it. And that's genuinely because that doesn't start with the fact that you're out of control. That starts with the fact that it's being restricted. And so when my children ask me for junk food, I always say yes. Always. Even if it's right before bed. I never, ever, ever say no. I don't necessarily give it to them right when they ask me for it, though. So I'm going to give you an example. Last night before bed, my son was like, oh, I want ice cream. And I know he didn't eat all of his dinner. In fact, he got upset because we wouldn't get the thing that he wanted for dinner. And so we ate our dinner and he did not eat dinner. He was eating all day. He was at my mom's. Everyone relax. Anyways, and so he's like, I want ice cream. I want this. I want that. And I was like, of course. I love ice cream. Ice cream is delicious, isn't it? We're going to have that tomorrow after dinner. We're all going to go as a family tomorrow after dinner. Isn't that going to be fun? And when he's like, no, I want it right now. I'm like, no problem, buddy. You didn't finish your dinner. So what we're going to do is we're going to put fruit out and some vegetables or whatever the dinner is. And once you eat that, if you still want the ice cream, we can have something or something similar. And the reality is, like, he was so tired, he didn't want the food. And so he wasn't going to get the ice cream. And so do you see how we still give him access to it? So he knows it's not restricted, but we just do it in a way where it's not like, of course, have the ice cream before bed and then go try and have a good sleep. You always, always, always want to say yes and. Not yes, but you didn't eat dinner. Yes, oh my gosh, we love ice cream. It's going to be so exciting when we go tomorrow after dinner. And make it fun for them, right? So this really just teaches the brain, because the brain hates scarcity. When something is scarce, it wants to overconsume. We call this actually in behavioral psychology, motivating operations. So motivating operations is really the things that motivate a behavior. It's like the motivating factors in order to engage in a behavior or put the brakes on a behavior. And so in motivating operations, we have deprivation and satiation. So when we are very satiated, when there's an abundance of stuff, we're not very motivated to engage in that behavior, to gain access to it, right? There's an abundance of it. We've already had too much. But when we're in a state of deprivation, we are very motivated to engage in gaining access to whatever the behavior is, right? And so as soon as we say no to a child, especially as it relates to certain types of foods, the brain goes straight into a state of deprivation. Even though that child might not be deprived of that food, maybe he just had some, but the perception of no creates that state of deprivation, which is going to make the brain want to gain access to it more. So you always say yes and. Of course, we love stuff like that. Amazing. And we're going to have it tomorrow. You still have your dinner available for you if you're hungry. Okay, so moving on, let's talk about the body, okay? So all of the messages and feelings and emotions that you have towards your bodies, your children literally encode immediately, okay? This is more specific for mothers and daughters or just mothers in general, but I work primarily with women, so, and most of my listeners are women anyway, so mothers and daughters, because we talk about the mother wound, and really the daughter is looking to the mother for her sense of identity, to understand her sense of worth, to understand her body, and create an identity around it. And so when you're getting ready and you're like huffing and puffing and nothing fits and you're not, or maybe you're like not putting any care into your appearance, you're just wearing baggy sweats and not even really time to do your hair, nothing like that, it really teaches the daughter not to take care of herself. And if you're upset or, like I said, huffing and puffing when you're trying to put on clothes, it teaches the daughter that she should be upset when she doesn't fit into clothes. It's like, I have to fit into this, not that fit into me, if that makes sense. It also kind of creates this, which is actually scary to think about, but it kind of creates this like disempowerment around body image and outcomes. And so it's kind of this like helplessness around, well, nothing fits me and nothing works, or I'm never going to be thin. Like there's this learned helplessness around it, which is really detrimental for the child, because at the end of the day, every single thing that you guys have, especially when it relates to something that's physically on your body, so if it's being overweight or a physical symptom, like whether you were conscious of it or not, you created. There is nothing that happens in the body that doesn't happen in the mind first. And so when the mind is very preoccupied and I shouldn't eat this, I shouldn't eat that, or like really doesn't like the body, then it sends messages down to the body of rejection and abandonment. And that body is going to hold on to everything because it's trying to create a protective barrier from itself, right? And so first of all, if I'm not, every day is a good body image day, okay? I'm not a fucking robot, I'm human. I don't love myself every single day. But on the days where it's very difficult for me to get behind my own body and my own body image, I really isolate from my children when engaging in getting dressed, or if I have to have a conversation with my husband or need to get it off my chest, this is not something that I talk about in front of my kids. And I do say things like, oh, today's like not a great body image day, or today is not a great, not a very happy day. Mommy doesn't feel like wearing a bathing suit today. And that's okay. Some days we feel like wearing a wrap and some days we feel like wearing the bathing suit. And so we want to bring neutrality to that and show how that's okay, because it's not just about this false sense of confidence. We'll just wear the bikini anyways. Like, you want to protect yourself as well. You want to be authentic yourself, because kids are going to notice that, right? And so anyways, you want to model both behaviors, but just be very careful how you speak to yourself, okay? The other thing, like, I'm going to leave this here, but eating for pleasure, not true hunger, gets noticed, guys. So your kids are very, very, very intelligent. Actually, the child brain has this like sixth sensibility where it's really picking up on social cues, because the child's brain is learning how to understand and manipulate its environment in order to survive. And so if you are engaging in overeating behavior for pleasure, maybe to reduce stress or because you've had a long day or because you're bored, the child doesn't even have to understand that that's what you're doing. The child can literally feel the energy of my mom is snacking all day and this keeps my mom happy or less irritable or calm, right? And so the child's brain is learning how to survive. And so the person that it's looking to is the mom and the dad in order for how to, like, their social cues, the energy. It's like frequency between you and your behaviors. You don't even have to say anything out loud. Like, children just know. Okay, so I would more often than not work on your own eating behaviors and model that for your children. Okay, we're gonna go into body talk just for a little bit, but with body talk, having a positive body image means that you are able to accept, appreciate, and respect your body. So I want you guys actually to reflect on your own relationship with your body. And this can be really challenging, I know, but I think this is more like a journal prompt, if you will. But I want you to reflect on, like, how do you actually feel about your body? Do you feel proud of your body that it's able to, you know, all of the things, like keep you up standing, walk, do the things that you like to do? Are there certain parts of your body that you reject or deny? So be honest with yourself, because I want you to really reflect on the parts of your body that you can accept and the parts that you can't accept. And once we bring it to the surface, it's much easier to work through it. But reflect on your own relationship with your body and understanding, especially now after all of this, how being conscious of your own relationship with your body can help you understand the messages and the energy that you're outputting with your children around and providing to your child. The last and final thing, and this is so effing important, okay? I'm so serious when I mean this. This, like, if you're gonna do one thing, parents, please do this. Do not criticize other people's bodies in front of your children. Huge no. When we look at somebody else and we immediately think, oh my God, say that person's gained weight, or oh my gosh, that person's so fat, or whatever it is, right? When we criticize, or that person has a big nose, when we criticize other people, the child hears, if I turn into that, I'm gonna be criticized and then I'm gonna be unlovable. The other thing is it really teaches the child to criticize other people. And the more that we criticize others, the more we actually criticize ourselves. And so one exercise that I get my clients to do, and hopefully this will be helpful for you guys, but a lot of my clients are really stuck in this like self-hate place. Instead of giving themselves love, I actually get them to notice the first thought that they have when they like meet somebody else. Maybe not even meet, just like pass somebody else in the street. And when I did this with myself, I noticed that my thoughts were very critical. And it wasn't necessarily around body image, but, you know, someone would pass me and I would say, oh gosh, like, it's too hot for that jacket, or that's a ridiculous color, or why would they get the car in that shape, or anything like that's an ugly car. And so remember that the human brain doesn't learn with positive reinforcement. It learns through negative reinforcement, because negative reinforcement is threat to survival, and the brain is going to remember anything that relates to survival, right? And so if you think negative thoughts about especially people you don't know and you criticize others, it is just a testament to how much you're criticizing yourself. And so if you want to be nicer to yourself and you want to learn to love yourself, start sending out that positive energy with other people. I did this like a couple of months ago, and I was at school and a girl walked into the bathroom and she was wearing, hilarious now because pink is so in right now, but she was wearing this bright pink sweater. And also she was, her hair was just a mess. Anyway, so the first thought I thought was like, oh my gosh, it looked like she just rolled out of bed. And I caught myself and I, in my head, then went, wow, that's a really lovely sweater. And when you can practice this with other people, you're going to notice you're going to be so much more compassionate with yourself. So when it comes to body talk and even really eating behaviors, like, of course, the first thing is we just want to model that behavior for ourselves, because the children are going to pick up on our own programming. Like, that's what raising a child is. The child's brain is always looking for social cues and energy and looking at everything that you're doing for the brain to learn how to survive in its environment. And then the other component when it comes to actually eating behavior is never say no. eliminate the Clean Plate Club and offer the like vegetable foods first on a plate completely alone. And we want to meet the resistance with compassion, right? Like the kids are going to push back. Like they're not stupid. They know how to get what they want. And so it's waiting there on the table for when they're ready. Okay, I'm just going to give you one last example and then I'm going to let you go. But not that I fully agree with everything that the Liver King does or says, but if you know the Liver King, you know that his kids all eat raw meat as well. Like I'm talking raw bull's balls, okay? Raw brain, raw liver. And his kids are small, or they were when he made this transition. And so this is definitely not something that I'm recommending, but I just want you guys to really understand the child's brain before the age of 7. No child before the age of 7 is going to intentionally starve itself. That part of the brain is not cognitively developed. After the age of 7, we start to really see ourselves in a different light, where we start to compare ourselves to other people and we start to manipulate our own behaviors in order to be accepted and loved. Okay, but before the age of 7, children are very, very, very egocentric. And I would actually say that it's actually like more like 0 to 5. After 5, things start to change from a cognitive development perspective, where the brain will prioritize fitting in over actual basic needs. But up until the age of like 5 to 7, basic needs come first. So there is no child who's in that age group who is going to intentionally starve themselves. If they say they're not hungry, they are not hungry. You can trust that, okay? And so what the Liver King did is he was switching everybody over to raw meat, and his kids were like, fuck no, we're not gonna eat this shit. That's disgusting. And he literally did not offer them anything else. The kids were not allowed to eat anything else. The food was sitting there when they were ready. And after day 3 of starving, they got up and they ate the food. Okay. And so I'm not suggesting this type of radical change, but what I am suggesting is that your kid, especially before the age of 7, is not going to intentionally starve themselves. So when they say no, and you just immediately reinforce that behavior by, you know, either pushing back and fighting them to finish their plate, or allowing them to get whatever they want and then reinforcing it with dessert, you're just teaching that child's brain how to behave. These are the formative years. And when I say formative, I mean their brains are literally forming. So you get to play the most important role in helping that brain to form. And so you are in the driver's seat here. You empower them to listen to their hunger cues, and you offer the food available that you want your child to eat. We talk nicely about food. It's not good food, bad food. It's nourishment always, never around fat or skinny. And you learn to heal your own relationship with yourself, with your body, and with your eating. And everything will be okay. Okay, my friends. I loved this podcast. I'm so glad I finally recorded it. I'm sure there's going to be lots of questions, so I'm available if you are finally listening to this. And I just hope you guys have an amazing day. If you like this episode, please don't forget to like and subscribe, and I'll see you back on another episode of the Head to Heal podcast. Bye.